face on the wide.
All right, let's do this. What's up, guys? Thanks for tuning in to the podcast. This episode is with Sid Cromanhook of Album VC. I had the amazing opportunity to actually interview him live in his office in Lehi, Utah. It was great. I filmed it, but unfortunately, I, for some reason, didn't get the footage. So, I know, a blunder on my end. But the audio is untampered with, so I hope that you guys can enjoy this episode.
Through the mid.
All right, Sid, you ready to rock and roll?
Let's do it.
Let's do this. All right, Sid, so just quickly introduce yourself here so I know a little bit about you, who you are, what your hobbies are, things that you like to do in your free time, whatever it might be, and then we can go from there.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah, so Sid Cromanhook. I grew up in Utah. I was born in L.A., but really call Utah home. Went to school here through college and fell into entrepreneurship, you know, so we'll talk about that a little bit today. But I really had no intention of being an entrepreneur. I probably as a kid wouldn't have known what that was, but fell into entrepreneurship and had some failures, had a little success, have migrated from being on the kind of building side as an entrepreneur to now the funding side. So I'm a full-time venture capitalist now with partners here at Album VC.
So Sid, with all that stuff, before I even get into anything, this was going to be one of the first interviews on this podcast, now 50 episodes in that I've done with different...
50, man, that's amazing.
50, yeah, it's been a long time coming, so it's just great to finally sit down with the person that I wanted to do this first with, and so I just want to let everyone know that this is definitely something I've wanted to do for a while. So now knowing that, I want to start with just a random question.
Sure.
Because I like to keep it light and fun. And so the random question that I have for you, Sid, is I know that you played basketball at Utah for 1 year.
Yeah.
So with that, I know that you might be competitive because you're very sporty and playing basketball for at the collegiate level, you definitely are competitive. So what do you remember? Can you tell us a story of the most competitive you've ever, like the most heated you've ever been in any sporting event where was it something that was just a huge game in basketball, or was it like a soccer game you're playing with your buddies? What is that one thing that you remember being so heated about, and why were you heated about that?
Yeah. Gosh, that's a great question. I remember in high school, we were playing Springville, and it was a game that would have put us in the state playoffs, and it seemed like it was going to be like this perfect story. I was fouled with a minute-ish to go. No, sorry. Seconds to go. Made the free throws. We're up one. We celebrated early. Some of our bench cleared. And they called a technical foul. And they hit the free throws to win the game. And it was like one of those most like felt it the most deeply. So now it was, I don't know how to describe it other than this. Yesterday, my daughter had a game. Maybe the stakes weren't as high, but they lost this game they should have won. And I went to her after, and my comments kind of, for me, go back to those times of losing. I think you learn as much in the moments that you lose as you do when you win. Because everybody, you know how somebody's going to feel when they win. Like, we all know how that feels, and it's predictable. How you respond when you lose is not always predictable. And I've had plenty of times where I would look back and kind of wince at myself for how I've reacted when I lose in a game. But you know, I gave her a big hug yesterday, and my comment was just like, "Hey, soak in the loss. It's kind of something good to learn from." And she is a bit further along, I think, in maturity at her age. She's 14 than I even as a high school senior, and sometimes now am when things don't go the way I want them to. But that was definitely one that I felt deep in my bones, man.
Yeah, me being sporty as well, I just definitely feel for the losses that are just not, you shouldn't lose. And you just, there's something about it sometimes where you just don't understand why that loss hurts so bad. But I definitely know how things are with competitive sporting matches. So Sid, to move on here to the bulk of what I want to talk about with you, when you were initially starting entrepreneurship, did you think about entrepreneurship in the beginning as something you wanted to do, or how did you initially, day one, get into entrepreneurship and say, okay, this is something that I'm going to be doing for the rest of my life, or at least engaged in for the rest of my life? Tell us that story.
Yeah. So there's a few kind of questions in there that I can comment to. I mean, one is, did I think it was going to be something that I would kind of do. As mentioned, it was not. Even when I first kind of left the traditional path, which for me was to go to medical school. So I was at Brigham Young University, and I was on the pre-med path. And even then, when I kind of fell into my first startup and the next, the whole time, my single mindset was, I want to make enough money to pay for medical school. That was it. Even with Zinch, which was, you know, my last and kind of the culminating sort of piece of you know, my time as an entrepreneur, even through that, I remember like kind of one day sort of thinking, I guess I'm an entrepreneur. So I've never really described myself that way because I wasn't completely deliberate about it. I was always deliberate once I got into something, you know, whether it was a basketball season, you know, whether it was a startup, you know, a new partnership, it all, I have a deep commitment to it, but entrepreneurship initially was just a means to paying for medical school.
No way. So Sid, I saw that with Cinch, you initially found a buddy that was trying to get into college, or I think it was he wasn't really thinking about college. This was in Chicago or something like that, where you wanted to create a platform or just a portfolio for him to make sure that he can show his prerequisites or whatever he wants to show to get into these bigger schools, that they should accept him. And that's kind of where Zinch started, correct? Where you were like, well, this can be something that's scalable, something that a lot of people might be interested in. So when that initially happened, how did you find, like, what did that situation turn out as? Like, how did you find that kid to do that for? And then even after that, how did you find the people that were willing to work with you on that when you realized that this was something you wanted to pursue?
Yep. So the initial, you know, kind of experience was, there was something personal in it for me and my two co-founders, Brad and Mick, where we all felt like there was difficulty in communicating who we were to maybe a school that would want us. And maybe that's thinking of ourselves higher than what we really were. I don't know. But there was definitely the personal feeling of like this challenge of, man, I got to cram it all through a test score, like the ACT or SAT. Like, that just feels like, dang, like I wish I could show something else or more. And so there was a thought there. But what you're talking about, so when I first left BYU before I'd graduated with Brad, we were classmates. We went to Detroit, and that was, you know, kind of our first endeavor, and learned a lot in sales in particular. And in the process, met a young man who came from a non-traditional background, first generation college student, came from an urban setting, and, you know, different than how we had grown up. As he, long story short, spent some time with him and helping him think about college, which he was interested in. And in the process, it kind of hit us over the head of like, geez, the college application admission process is different depending on where you were born and who you were born to and the color of your skin, your socioeconomic background, all these different things. And so early on, fast forward to Zinch, like our mantra was, I am more than a test score. And the thing that we talked about with schools was leveling the playing field in college admissions to say, should it really matter? In fact, you know, schools, we're talking here in Utah, schools in Utah need and want people from diverse backgrounds. It gives a more complete experience representative of our country at the least, and hopefully this world, to the students there. So that's how it began. And then there was another question embedded that I'll just hit really quickly, which was, you know, kind of coming to my co-founders, like, you know, this was not my idea alone. Like, there were the three of us all had a shared experience. Mick was at Princeton. Me and Brad were at BYU. Mick had built something that was a portfolio-like presentation for a student. Me and Brad saw it. We were on a business trip for another business that we had got going there I think we were in Pittsburgh, and we drove up to Mick at Princeton on Princeton's campus. No way. He opened up his laptop and he's like, here's what I'm working on. And we saw it and we're like, yo, there is something here. and then where it kind of went from there was eventually Mick decided to drop out of Princeton. And we were debating on if we move up to to New Jersey, or if he comes out to Provo. And he came to Provo and we started Zinch.
Mm. So when you went to Detroit, what was that initial, just a quick question here, why did you go up to Detroit? What was the purpose? What were your goals? Was it to run Zinch more seriously, or was it to meet Mick, or what was that goal in moving to Detroit?
Detroit was like 3 years before Zinch ever started. So Detroit was kind of our first entrepreneurial endeavor. I was in a Econ 101 class at BYU. My buddy Brad, who's, you know, fast forward, we were co-founders in Zinch. His father, you know, had a business and they had sales reps throughout the country for that particular business in the mortgage industry. And we were doing an internship so that we could get exposure to sales and things. Mm-hmm. And we sort of saw the success people were having, and we're like, man, why don't we get a shot? You know, why didn't you give us a shot at doing this? And they're like, yeah, we don't really have any territory available except for Detroit. You want to move to Detroit? And so Brad like had this idea. He's like, you know, thinking about it. And I can't remember all the details other than I was sitting in that Econ 101 class when I was like, I couldn't get it out of my brain. I'm like, dang, there's something here. So I checked out mentally of the class and I wrote him a letter, like a 1 or 2 page letter, basically saying, I want to do this with you, man. Let's go pursue it. I was newly engaged. So that meant like a few months in, or newly married, a few months into marriage, me, my wife, Ryan, and Brad, we moved. We dropped out of school, BYU. We moved to Detroit, Michigan, where we'd never stepped foot in our lives. And we kicked off like, you know, learning to sell, which has become a really important part of what I did as an entrepreneur. What I do as a VC is knowing how to understand what somebody wants and you know, deliver something of value to them.
That's so true. So true. So another quick question here before we move on in the interview. How did you meet Mick? Was that something that you had a connection through BYU?
Brad's brother. Yeah. So me and Brad, we were, you know, really good friends. Mick, when we were first at BYU, Mick was in high school. So we went and watched his basketball games at Provo High. Oh, wow. He was still a great basketball player. And then we were pumped when he went to Princeton. And so we followed his kid brother. And those two are brothers.
So Sid, when you initially started Zinch, what was some of the fears? Walk me through your mindset, like the first 6 months of Zinch. How are you feeling about it? What were your goals? How did things change when the first year hit, when you had been running Zinch for however long you had been?
Yeah.
Tell us about some of that time span there, mentally, physically, how your relationships were, or how things were just going. Tell us about that time with Zinch.
Again, there, I wanted to throw in relationships and personal, mental sort of stuff, because with Sid especially, he traveled a lot, and you'll come to hear that. So I wanted to really just see from him how entrepreneurship and traveling would work and how he did that for himself if he just kind of pushed through it. I really wanted to understand, because that's something that people really worry about, is going somewhere new and then trying to really optimize that environment around you. So I feel like Sid is someone to really help us out to understand that. So that's why I kind of threw that out there, in hopes that he can say, here's what I would do in this particular situation personally, and how I'd optimize a new environment. So. Mm-hmm.
Yep. So initially, there was a ton of what I would say is, when you start a startup, and especially when you put some of your own hard-earned money into it, which we did, we put what for us was a lot of money. You know, it was Brad put in $60,000, I put in $60,000, and Mick borrowed $40,000 and brought the initial like vision and design for what we were building. That was a lot of money, and is a lot of money, but especially then was a lot of money to us. It had represented years of hard work and leaving school to earn it. What that means when you are highly accountable, when the buck stops with you, when everything can fail or succeed because of you, you feel every little bump in the road. It's like the difference between walking on a gravelly, prickly road barefoot versus with shoes. You just feel it all, which is exhilarating. I'm not trying to say that in any other way than to say it's exhilarating, one. Two, I remember one thing is my in-laws wanted to invest a little bit of money in it. And I was like, no way. Like, no way, because I didn't want to lose their money. I had already, you know, taken their daughter away before she had finished her undergrad. We eventually went back and she graduated. But Because I didn't know, like, you really, you don't know, like, you have massive self-belief, of course, but I didn't know. And I was okay failing personally, you know, but I didn't want to fail other people. I remember those feelings.
So Sid, just to make sure that I have my notes right here, did you run business in college, or was it when you got out of BYU that you started running Zinch?
Yeah.
In college, were you doing anything, or was it just purely school?
No, so that business that I mentioned, the first one, when we moved to Detroit, I wasn't graduated. What happened was, once we got that up and running, we kept an apartment in Michigan and an apartment in Provo. And I would go to school for 2 weeks, and then I would fly to Michigan and work for a week. And I just kept going back and forth.
Oh, wow.
So that business was not a venture-backed business, wasn't software, but it was a great, for us, a source of capital. And so it gave rise to a few other startups, you know, that we tried before Zinch. So by the time Zinch started, we'd recently graduated. But in the startup before, there was kind of, you know, figuring stuff out. In this case, flying on Frontier flights from from SLC to DTW, you know, that were long. I had a new baby a little bit through that. So I remember times where she cried for, like, you know, hours of that 3.5 hour flight. Yeah.
That's the grind right there.
Yeah.
So Sid, I also have notes here and just questions that I want to ask you based on my research that I've done, and to make it applicable for the people that listen to as well. So with knowing that when you were in college, you were running these businesses, going from Detroit to Provo from week to week, for people in college growing a business, what advice do you give those people to be successful with the stuff that they're doing? What, like, they have to juggle college, they have to juggle their lives and a business. Because you've done that, what would you give advice-wise to these people to make sure that they come out of that at least happy and successful, whether their businesses fail or not?
Yeah.
What do you tell those people?
Just kind of for the people that are juggling a lot of stuff, whether it be college or anything else, it's just for you to understand from Sid and how he did it when he's traveling, a family, a business, a couple of businesses, how he did that for the people that are confused on how to even optimize all those things, have a successful business, just be happy, enjoy your life. So that's why I wanted to get Sid's input, because he is the king. He has been through this all. So I wanted to really make sure that you guys come away with something good here.
Yeah. Great question. You know, I feel strongly about this, which is, like, those classes that I took while I was running my business in the Marriott School at BYU, no classes were ever more valuable, because it was actual application. You know, it was actually, like, thinking about how this applies to something real that I was doing with real customers, with a real business. So there's a couple things in that. You know, one is, there's a huge case, if you're a student, to finding ways, whether it's through an internship. Like, if I'm a student right now at the U or BYU, like, I don't know why, if you had any interest in software, you wouldn't try to be an intern at one of the fastest growing companies in the state. Because what you learn at a company that can grow that fast and keep the wheels on and see success, like a Podium, you know, like, what you learn in that environment is just magical. It's special, it's rare, and it makes what you learn in the classroom that much, you can connect. It's like that 100%. Synapse connects for you, you know? It's like, as a parent, I finally start to realize the things my mom would say because I'm a parent. Well, guess what? You don't, you know, you can't, you know, some things just take time. Other things you can run in parallel, and being able to put yourself in a scenario to apply learning, which I think work internship is the type of thing. Like, it's invaluable.
Yeah, 100%. So Sid, to move on here, when Zinch finally got traction after you had been working on it for however long it took for it to really get off the ground and see some movement, tell us about this phase, kind of what was going on. Tell us about, like, a failure that you had in this phase of your business and how you eventually got over it. Kind of like the previous question, tell us about what you were feeling like, all that good stuff, when Zinch finally got some good traction, you were hiring people, things were moving along really well. Tell us about this phase within Zinch for us.
Totally. There was a phase that I remember distinctly. We were growing well domestically. A meaningful percentage of high school students in the U.S. were using our software, our website. a meaningful number of U.S. colleges were our customers. It was growing. We had launched a customized version of our service in China. I moved my family to Beijing. Yeah. We were part of that. In this process, we kind of hit this stage of startup where you're not kind of a toddler anymore. Maybe you're a teenager. I don't know. But you're in this. You're not yet. You can't say like done, drop the mic yet. But you're not just a, you know, eating ramen anymore. It's you've got something. You've got real customers and real revenue. During that phase, I remember hearing more and more like this notion of like senior people, you know, experienced people. And it makes a lot of sense. Why wouldn't you bring in experienced people? And in fact, you know, probably the person most impactful in our business was an experienced entrepreneur. Her name is Ann Duane. And we brought her in. She was an advisor. She became our CEO. She's phenomenal. To this day, somebody I look up to and who I learn a lot from. And she's also a VC now, so we can compare notes. But I remember we made one decision that was painful, and we couldn't have perfectly known, but there was a critical function of our business that had been overseen by somebody who was with us from the beginning, and we kind of felt like we needed to level up there. And so we handed the reins to another team member, somebody with a deeper pedigree, you know, and we did a massive technology overhaul in our business, and it was painfully crippling. Something that I think in hindsight, of course it's easy in hindsight. I think all of us went in eyes wide open to that decision, but I think the takeaway now as a VC is you invest in people who, are, you know, kind of hungry, oftentimes young, and don't know any better, right? They're audacious. They believe that there's something that doesn't exist in the world or that the way everybody's doing it is wrong. And that's like, you know, that's an entrepreneur. They're going in to say, this should exist in the world. Confidence. I think that the tendency to say when you need to start bringing in adults, I look at that very carefully. I think there is something to be said for experience. Again, I benefited from it as much as anybody, in one person in particular, and Anne and many others. But I also think that, you know, just like that as software scales and as teams scale, you do have some percentage of people that beautifully scale with a business. And so I'm careful to start sort of thinking grass is greener. You know, when you have something good, don't take it for granted and continue to invest in and build those people, because you know, got a little hindsight from our own experience.
So Sid, if someone like in my case is looking at becoming like that high level, the adult per se, they want to be someone like that because they have the ability to run those companies that they see they can help with in a way. To get that experience for you, what does that take? Is it just being an entrepreneur for like 20, 25 years?
This question definitely came up in my mind because I feel like just the goal of what I'm doing for this podcast in general is for that question to be answered for you guys. And so because we see ourselves and we want to be that person that's established and people look to, because Sid's tasting that, because he basically is that person, I feel like that's applicable for us to really understand, at least generalistically, because it's a hard question to be like, here's what you need to do. It's a really long path. Like, you have to take certain steps. But I feel like that's just applicable for us to really grasp it at this point, especially with Sid. I feel like it just came to that time where I needed to ask that, and it led there. So I just shot it out there.
Not necessarily. Look, I mean, we all kind of grow at our own pace, and then there's just such a spectrum of types of companies and roles within companies. I mean, I think the advice that, you know, I will give my own, you know, daughter as she's a freshman in high school, when she kind of gets to that stage, is go. It is about who is on your left and right hand side. It is about who you surround yourself with. We know that that's the case in friendships. You know, we know that that's the case in other areas, you know, teammates, in any sort of setting where it takes more than one person to win. In the case of like entrepreneurship, like, I don't think there is, short of starting your own startup, which you learn certain things you just can't learn any other way, I would say joining and being part of a team that has that, you know, especially one that's in a high growth scenario. And there's teams that I'll tell people when they ask, like, hey, what companies do you like in Utah? I'm like, look, I like any company I've invested in, probably, but But of course, there are some companies that just have something magical going on. And when you're around that, like you do, you start to, you talk a little bit like that people. You probably dress a little bit like the, you know, those people over time. Most importantly, you start to adopt like some of those kind of habits of success that aren't secrets, that exist throughout the world, all, you know, different types of companies. They're not exclusive to tech, but, you know, it just happens to be the industry I'm in. Like, you know, when you do find it, like it's special. Like I still, the way that I write some emails, the way that I follow up, the way that I put together a deck, the way that I handle conflict, I've probably, if it's a good way, any of those things, I've probably learned it from somebody I worked with. I probably learned it from Brad or Mick or Ann or now John and Diogo and people that I'm with. Like, I have very little that's original. Like most people think, like entrepreneur, like you just think crazy and zany. No, like
inherit a lot of stuff,
and it's some serendipity. Like we all we all have some serendipity strike, and maybe you're in a position to grab it, maybe you're not. But you know, man, if you're in a setting like this, if you're in a tech hub like Utah right now, there is serendipity flickering everywhere, and go get it. And the worst that can happen is you fail, and you're still living in a first world country and probably going to be okay, you know? So, 100%.
Yeah, I really do believe with you when you say things are inherited more than you think. I thought about that just barely, and I'm like, I really do a lot of stuff that's just, here's what this person did, here's what that person did, and then I'm like, like not a copy, because you take it in and you originalize it your own way, like a certain way that you think it works best for yourself. So I think it's really cool that you say that, and it can really be scalable to people looking to start any sort of business or really anything that they'd want. So Sid, another quick question here. When you were in this phase of launching Zinch, how did you initially market it? Because marketing is big, just to make sure that you're getting sales, people that know about your product and they can buy. What did you do to market it, to make sure that you had people like BYU looking at it, had people in, you know, the West, East, the North, all these sorts of things? How did you market it so that people all across the globe knew who you were?
Mm-hmm. Great question. Yeah. This is really Mick's genius. I think, you know, Mick had, you know, just a real grasp. We all felt what we felt something visceral of like, this should be different. Mick had the skill of being able to communicate that, and the way he communicated that to our future, you know, users of our website, you know, students, was to kind of hit right at the heart of that pain. Like there are, the best startups are solving the realest pains, the most like palpable, deeply felt pains. That's why it's obvious. That's why it's a software you're either willing to pay for or spend your time with. And that's where he came out with the notion of, I am more than a test score. Like, because that was something that for us and our peers were like, exactly. Like, that's the whole point. And so, it was a simple phrase, but I think what it did was it struck a chord that was just basic. That was like, I'm into the arts. I'm into sports. I'm into whatever it is. And I don't really have a way to share that, you know, other than kind of a black and white college application. Why isn't there a better tool?
So Sid, another one of these questions I have here doing my research on you, I saw that you moved Zinch to Beijing with your family at one point. So with that, to make this again applicable for the people that are listening, if someone is in that situation, or if it comes across their mind on how they want to move, because Utah might be a tech hub, they want to move here, and because there's good opportunity, there's good people, there's a lot of good people that you can hire in a way. So if they're thinking about moving, then what do you tell them, because you've been through that? You've been through that experience. If they're an entrepreneur running a huge business and infrastructure in one place, how do they move that whole thing to another place? What are the things that you saw to tell the people that are listening how they can do that optimally?
From the States to Beijing, that's about as big of a move that you can make for your life and your business. And so for the people that are kind of wondering how that would all work, I know that it might be more simple nowadays with technology and everything going through, you know, your laptop or a computer. But it's harder, like, for tangible products where you have to carry, like, an infrastructure, how you can go from one place to the next place without moving your whole factory, you know, this kind of deal. So I was mainly wondering about the logistics of how everything worked with you know, your operations and your management and all that stuff. So that's kind of the direct goal of the question here specifically.
Yeah, sure. So I think there's a couple things that come to mind. One is wherever you're coming from has created in you a notion of what's normal, your own kind of homeostasis. This is my world. You know, I live in San Jose, California. I live in Salt Lake City, Utah. I live in Beijing, China. And wherever you're going is to some degree different. For us, this was a dramatic difference. This was a new country that spoke a different language, that had a different way of life, that had a different cultural context, everything. And so the biggest learning was be very careful with the expectations you set. And at best, just clear them. Just clear your expectations. Be open and flexible. I hear this with Utah. You have people who are haters on Utah. And, you know, your first reaction is to be like, well, I don't know, move. But the next reaction is to be like, no, I get it. We all feel that sometimes. But what you need to quickly realize is, hey, guess what? Like, you, even if you're not officially a Chinese citizen in my case, you are a contributing member to Beijing now. Yeah, there are 23 million people, but you're a contributing member. You help define what that city is. For other people on the subway, I commute an hour and a half by subway every day to the office. Mm-hmm. For other people in my apartment complex, for the people I played pickup basketball with at, you know, at subway stop number Dongdan was the name of it. You know, like that, So it's easy to pawn it off, something we don't like, and especially if we're coming from a different context. But, yo, if you're coming from California and you're moving here in Utah, embrace it, man. Be open a little bit. We need you. We want you. And you're now a contributing piece of what we all talk about, which is Utah continuing to be mm-hmm. more welcoming, you know, more comfortable for more types of people. It makes everything better, you know, from the ski slopes to the tech companies, to cities, to schools where our kids go. We want that. And so let's all just, you know, contribute our piece. Now I'm saying that as if I somehow knew that. Like, look, there were days where I was like ready to punch a cabbie because a person who got in the cab because they like cut in front of my wife who was pregnant. I was like, how is that? But it's like, you know what? Turns out when you read the past 100 years of Chinese history, you start to understand that they have a very different cultural context than I do 100%. As an American. And so it's super easy to write it off. It's super easy to like somehow think that communist China bad. It's like, I don't know. They're managing a lot more, you know, bigger population than us. And I've come to just appreciate since then, like different contexts and to say, you know what? No culture, people, country have a monopoly on happiness or codes to live their life that are right or good. There are a lot of ways to go about your life, and we can be respectful, you know, of one another.
So Sid, with that as well, talk about how moving your business was. Was it simple because it was tech, it was online, where you kind of just worked through a laptop, or you had a different infrastructure that didn't matter, or had a certain location?
Great HQ? Question. No, doing business in China is fundamental. It's as different as the languages almost comparing Chinese.
Like how
and
do you
English.
Talk to everyone else and like kind of just.
So I happen to speak Chinese, so that helped me.
Oh,
but,
wow!
But look, I guess what I didn't add in all that is when you're operating, like if I'm talking to, if there's some company that wants to set up shop in Utah and they're coming from I don't know New York City, it would behoove them to have local team members, right? Because they would know, like they would just kind of know the lay of the land. They would be helpful in recruiting. They kind of get things and they could make life for your out-of-towners, out-of-staters a lot smoother in adjusting. Because so much of it is like, it's sometimes it's, can I do my job? But oftentimes it is, am I supported? Do I feel a part of this team? Do I fit in? And so in our case with China, we had a Chinese chairman named Tom Melcher, this super talented, brilliant. I was with him a couple months ago in New York City where he lives now. He had operated in China. He had raised kids in China. So the advice we got from Tom in leading that charge affected the business, but it affected my family. It affected where I decided to send my oldest, who's now a freshman in high school, to kindergarten in Beijing. It affected where we moved. It affected where we bought groceries, like so much. So like I benefited massively from, incidentally, an American living in China who got it. but also then our Chinese team members. So that we were the only two white people, Americans, on the team. We ended up building a team of about 50 people there. All of them were local. There was no English really being spoken, right, in most of the time in the office. And so if you want to succeed in any geography, to some extent, sometimes more than others, you need a percentage of your team to be and understand that geography and those people. Like, you can read books ad nauseum. If you have not grown up in mainland China, you will not ever perfectly come to grasp it all. And that's okay. Like, look at just the difference in a perspective of somebody from Hong Kong versus mainland China right now with what's been going on. Like, they have very different views, neither like perfectly right or wrong, just different based on how they've grown up.
So Sid, another one of the last questions, transitioning into the end of the interview here. One of the last questions that I have written down is, I saw that you were interviewed on the Life Fix podcast, and I listened to that, and I heard in there, I was really wondering what you meant by this, and I wanted to ask you. The host asked you, I think it was Eric, I don't know his last name, but it was Eric. He asked you what about, like, how you got to be an entrepreneur, right? How you got to grow Zinch, the place you're in, and knowing that you wanted to just pay for medical school. So you had this mindset of this path, and then there was obviously the other path that you pursued, which was growing Zinch. And then you said that you don't really believe in, like, one certain path. It's more like we're all good at a lot of things, and you just kind of need to figure that out. And so with that mentality that you said, what you said there in that podcast, where did that come from originally? Was it that experience, or was it like when you were raised that came from your mom, your dad? Where did that kind of mentality originate from? Tell us that.
Yeah, great question. Man, that's good. You know, I think we have our lives, and depending on how we're raised and the notion we have of success, like, there is something in our brain for success. It could be, you know, for me, it was probably a wife and a couple kids and a happy family and, you know, lived. What happens along the way is something just doesn't go to plan, you know? So for me, like, a big one in my startup was that my brother passed away, like the first year of my startup. And it, for me, changed everything by bringing it to a screeching halt. I remember sitting with my co-founders just saying, hey, I'm out. You know, you can have my equity. Like, nothing to me mattered, but just like feeling that, you know, pain and just kind of hope that I would find healing in my heart. And I had, amazing partners, no different now than my partners, Diogo and John at Album, where what they will do when it gets really rough is they're by your side and they're powering through. What that does, though, is that changes. Like, so yeah, I would have thought that I would have, with all my siblings, we all have our kids, and I know all my nephews and nieces and my in-laws and stuff, but life happens, and life has some chaos, and this existence is fragile. And so, you know, so for me, things could go a lot of ways, and I'm not great at it still, but the ability to at least concede that what I think the next 5 years will look like for me, there are some wrinkles. And I'm okay with that, because those usually create other opportunities. You know, so my ability now to empathize with people who deal with mental health issues like depression is fundamentally different than it was before. My issue, you know, my ability in Utah, where, like, it is a real topic to empathize with people who've lost loved ones maybe earlier than they would have thought, you know, like, it just changes. So I feel like, yeah, that path and that road, like, now I can't imagine doing anything other than actually being a VC. So even this conversation, we're talking about my path as entrepreneurship. I actually think that my path in entrepreneurship led me to be a VC. This is like the time where I'm like, this is what I was born to do. But the only reason I can say that is because of having done entrepreneurship, experienced some of life's kind of hand that it just dealt, and saying, hey, you know, like there's as much pain as there is like joy in this life. 100%. And that's okay. And like, thank God we have like people that can lift us along the way, yeah. you know, and that it, I can still be lifted by others and I can be one now to actually lift. It's like a very, it's as thrilling a feeling as anything.
Yeah. And that's definitely a hard question because there's so many opinions and there's a lot of noise in that space where it just kind of ends up being like, well, how do you just be happy? And it's like, well, that's like on you, man.
You know, like, yeah.
No one can answer that question. That's got to be you. So there's, it's just interesting to hear the different things that people have to say about how they map their actions to what they want, how that changes. Mm-hmm. And so Sid, the last question that I have here for you is a really applicable one that I think people really like on this show. It's basically, if someone wanted to do exactly what you do, the position you sit right now, and they're, say, in my position where they're just a college kid, they're kind of figuring things out, to get to the spot that you're at, what do you tell them to do if they're listening to this episode? They lock their phone, put the episode on pause. When they walk out the door, get out of the chair, they do all that stuff. What is that first thing that they should do to make sure that they can map that correctly to what you are now? What is that first thing that as they walk out of the door that they should do? Is it talking to someone, doing whatever like that? What do you think?
I would say two things. I mean, if I try to boil it down and how I would talk to any student at a university who wanted advice, I would say, put yourself in a situation where you have to work really hard. We are in a state that just so happens to have a lot of weird corrugated plastic or even billboards or signs on cars that's like, want to make $120K a year? Want to be my apprentice? It saddens me. It saddens me that for people who should and have a legacy of understanding that it's brick by brick sometimes, that we think that there's a short path. There is not a short path. There is just getting comfortable in work and finding some joy in good old-fashioned work. I learned that on a paper route as a kid, period. Second is finding something that you can go deep on, giving it deep thought. Usually it's something that like irks you, like, why is this way? Or for someone like one of my boys, it's like he has to have a can of paint in his hands right now to paint stuff. Like, and I love that. And I'm like, when I see that, like something insatiably productive in creating either art or solving a problem or pounding at something that trying to figure it out, like that persistence for something that you either love or that irks you, because both can inspire that creativity. Yeah. There is like what you're doing. You know, you have an interest in understanding something. So you've done 50 of these in the time that we first spoke. Like, that is exactly what you should be doing. If you know how to work and you know how to persistently tap on something until you finally get, you know, a little crack in that window or that wall, like, that's it. Like, I you know, that sounds kind of simple, but I would say that's it.
Yeah. There's definitely a lot there. I think that's pretty interesting. So, but Sid, we're definitely well over our time here. So if you just want to give us any shout outs to yourself, where you want us to go, if you have anything for us to look at, any links, whatever you might want to shout out to us.
I really appreciate this. Like, I think it's awesome that there are people who can bring different perspectives and ask different questions to anybody in this community and especially, you know, tech. I would say if people wanted to learn more, you know, about me, my name's kind of long and hairy. The easiest way to find us is album.vc. So ALBUM.V is in Victor, C is in Cat. Album.vc on Instagram, album.vc on the web. It's an easy way to find me. I'm on LinkedIn and other places that you would guess. But what we do at Album is all about, you know, appreciating the art of entrepreneurship and you know, we learn from kind of my experiences and then each team member, my partners, John and Diogo. And so anyway.
All right, so I just want to thank you for coming on the show. It's definitely been a long time coming, but thanks for sharing your experiences.
You bet, brother. Thanks.
Special and present of the fighter. I hope you enjoyed this episode with Sid. I really, really enjoyed talking with him and being able to be with him live. I just want to remind you guys to also subscribe, rate, and like the show if you like what I'm doing so I can grow and reach more people. Follow my Instagram, Josh Chingas, @JoshChingas, to find content for the podcast there. But other than that, I will see you guys on the next episode.